number four might be good stewardship of our income. So you have to know that that's number four, not number one. Because if something happens that would not glorify God, you're going to lose money if that would be more glorifying to God than it would be not to glorify God, because that's your number one goal. Does that make sense? So rank ordering the values are very critical. It's those things that you will not compromise as you achieve your purpose.
Thank you so much for joining us for this edition of the Lead Like Jesus podcast. This is Karen Conley, and we are in for a fantastic conversation today with Phyllis Hendry. And Phyllis is the CEO of Lead Like Jesus, a familiar voice to much of our listening audience. Phyllis, it is so fantastic to be able to talk with you today.
Oh, Karen, thank you so much. It is always so much fun just to hear your voice and be with you on this podcast.
Well, we're going to be focusing in on an aspect that is near and dear to your heart, as you have recently been a part of the project to rewrite and update the Lead Like Jesus book, and is now Lead Like Jesus Revisited. We are going to talk about the head of a great leader. And if you would, for anybody maybe who hasn't been to a Lead Like Jesus encounter, paint the big picture of those four different elements before we narrow into the head. And so that way they can kind of know where we're going with this and how this can be helpful to them as leaders.
Well, as you know, Lead Like Jesus always focuses on the leader. We think that great leadership comes from great leaders. And so we know that that's an inside-out process. So because of that, we always start with the heart of the leader, because we believe if the heart is not right, there's nothing else that we could teach that would make a difference. We can teach what to do in leadership, how to do leadership, but in the heart is the why we do leadership. It's our intention and our motivation. So we think that the heart is absolutely critical to becoming a Lead Like Jesus leader. The next section that we talk about, we want to look at the head. We think that when our hearts are transformed, then our heads become informed. What we've come to understand is that our hearts will take us places that our heads just won't fit. But when we come to that place, our thinking with a transformed heart, amazing things happen. And we so believe that Romans 12:2, that because when we can be transformed by the renewing of our mind. And so once our heart is transformed and we begin to get those thoughts, those principles into our minds, amazing things can happen. So the head is about what leaders think who lead like Jesus. And then we have the hand section. And what we know is that beliefs drive behaviors. And so it's so critical when we think about our heart being transformed, our head being informed, and that we are transformed by the renewing of our mind, then we know that we will do things differently. So the hands, that's all about behavior. What do we do? What does it look like to lead like Jesus? Not just in our work life, but what does that look like at home? What does that look like in all the places where I have influence? And then lastly, we talk a great deal about the habits, and we believe the habits are the way to stay deeply connected to the Father and also to others. So we have a section of habits that we call the being habits. Those are those habits that cause us to be with the Father, those habits that cause us to go deeper. We know that He is the transforming agent in our lives, and that time with Him makes all the difference in us. And then we have doing habits, those habits that we believe that leaders who lead like Jesus will practice in their behavior. So those are the four areas that we teach and Lead Like Jesus.
As you kind of put those four puzzle pieces together, I want to just encourage anyone in our listening audience, if you are a visual learner like I am, that just kind of whet your appetite to really think about going ahead and purchasing the Lead Like Jesus book, but that there's also a study guide along with it. So as we are able to dive into this just one topic, as you said, these are so interconnected. And so I want to really encourage you to go and get those resources so that you really can begin to be transformed from the inside out. As we talk about the head, Phyllis, You know, our listening audience is full of leaders in every spectrum of age and education and leadership role. But most everybody who identifies themselves as a leader, they're all about developing and implementing a vision. And we hear vision statements and all of those kinds of things that kind of are the end result, kind of down the chain. And what I love about this premise of lead like Jesus is you really do go back to the very beginning and you talk about purpose. Why is purpose such an important first step when it comes to the head of a great leader?
We all have common purpose. God has given that to us very clearly in Scripture. Whatever you do, do it all for the glory of God. But what we are taught throughout Scripture is that God has great plans, that He has planned the good work that we will do long before we're born. So there's purpose in our DNA. And so it's so important when we begin to think about what we are doing, we talk about purpose and mission, and we always ask the question, what business are you in? What are you trying to achieve? What is the purpose that God has given to you? When we look at Ephesians 2:10, and I love this passage so much because it says that God truly has already planned out the purpose of our life, the good work that we are to do, and He created us perfectly to match that good work. So we know that purpose is key for all of us. And when you think about vision, you have to start with purpose because that's the beginning line. What's your purpose for the vision? What are you trying to accomplish? And so it's really important that we think about our purpose as the start line for vision.
I loved the exercises that even in the book that you took the reader through to help them really kind of hone in on their traits and on their interactions to kind of be able to come up with an idea of, okay, yes, I have this common purpose, but God also gave me a specific purpose that goes with the gifts that He's given me. Could you maybe explain that a little bit?
What we do, even in our training, as you know, Karen, we actually take people through writing their own mission statement. You know, we often have mission statements for our organizations, but we don't always think about our individual mission statement. So we have a section where we talk about how, let's look at your life purpose. Let's look at what that looks like. So a great way to do that is to first just think about those God-given traits that are unique to you. There are so many things that we know about ourselves. Do we have teaching ability? Do we have artistic ability? Do we have a sense of humor? What are the kinds of things that you think that God gave you that seem maybe a little highlighted in you that are not so much in someone else that you feel like they're your gifts? And so write these nouns down. They are nouns. And so you think about, what are the nouns that describe the God-given traits in my life? So literally, think about next, what are the ways that you interact with people? Do you teach people? Do you like to produce things? Do you like to manage things? Do you like to encourage? Do you like to lead? Do you like to coach? Write. What are the verbs that really attract you that you like to do most? And then when you think about the nouns and you think about the verbs, you start to put a picture together. So in our book, we talk about what Ken chose in his nouns were, he chose sense of humor, people skills, teaching skills, and role model. And then he used verbs, educate, help, inspire, and motivate. And then the last part of just writing a mission statement is you visualize what your perfect world would be, one that would really please you and the people around you, and something that really sounds like an excitement to your soul to say, this is what I want to do. Ken wrote it this way. He said, a perfect world is where everyone is aware of the presence of God in their lives and realizes they're here to serve and not be served. So when you start to think about putting all that together, here's how it came out. So his life purpose was to be a loving teacher and role model of simple truths who helps and motivates myself and others to be aware of the presence of God in our lives and realize we're here to serve and not be served. Now, he's worked on that over time as I've worked on mine. and we've made it a little bit shorter. But it gives you a beginning, gives you a process to say, let me think about those special traits, let me think about how I interact with people, and let me think about my picture of the future, and that will help me write a mission statement.
This makes it so doable. There are times where you feel like, how do you figure out your purpose? But when you really break it down that way, it really can, in a very concise way, get you focused. So I hope that everybody out there, if you've not gone through that exercise, would definitely take the time to do it, because it seems like a fantastic exercise to really just narrow your focus. Phyllis, as we are thinking about the head of a leader and they have defined their purpose, there's really still an emphasis that needs to be made, and maybe a distinction between your purpose and your core values. How would you differentiate the two?
Well, first of all, your purpose is really about the business that you're in, your mission statement, as we just described, and your values are those intangibles that will guide your journey to accomplish your mission. These are the non-negotiables in your life. And one of the things that we have learned that we think is extremely important is that you have to rank order those values. So we give several examples in Lead Like Jesus Revisited that it's so important. If you have a core value, number one, of glorify God in everything you do, and then that number four might be good stewardship of our income. So you have to know that that's number four, not number one. Because if something happens that would not glorify God, you're going to lose money if that would be more glorifying to God than it would be not to glorify God, because that's your number one goal. Does that make sense? So rank ordering the values are very critical. It's those things that you will not compromise as you achieve your purpose.
I love that, because it does help you to go, okay, what is most important? You know what?
Yeah.
Honoring the Lord, glorifying the Lord is most important. And so sometimes that means that some of my other values are lesser down that line, are going to have to be set aside for that top goal. Is that an accurate perception of that?
That's exactly right. And I often say, don't let anything matter more than what matters most. When you think about your values, having them rank ordered, that you know what are the most important things. And for sure, when you are in this mission and you're on the journey to accomplish the vision, those values are going to be critical to getting you there. And if those get out of order, you will be able to tell that that has happened in an organization, and I would say, too, in a family.
Phyllis, every time I talk to you, I think of how many tweets could come. You have so many great quotes. I'm like writing notes here. Don't let anything matter more than what matters most. That is so valuable to keep in front of us. But in that same thought, we're both busy, as probably everybody in our listening audience, and there's so much external pressure. How do you recommend for us to be able to stay true to that purpose and stay true to who God made us to be in the midst of all the external pressure that we are going to face while we're here?
That is such a good question, and there's just only one answer for me, and that is this deep intimacy that comes in the relationship that we have with the Lord. This Jesus relationship that we have that keeps us centered on Him, that keeps us focused on where He wants us to go. There's just no other way that we can stay focused on what He wants us to be, on what we're to do, on the mission that He has given us, because the world's pull is everywhere around us. And as you said, we are all so busy, and we know what that stands for, being under Satan's yoke. And so for us to take time away, I mean, that's the thing the evil one would so love, is that if he could just keep us from meeting with the Lord, just keep us from this busyness that we are just constantly too busy to take time away to communicate with the Father, to get quiet before Him, to get clarity from Him. His mission is accomplished. Our job is to say no. The only job we have is to make space for God to act, to make space for Him to speak, and take time to hear Him in the busyness. And I will guarantee from personal experience that when we do that, even the busyness is calmer. there's something about this moment of clarity that comes that just slows down things to help you think. I mean, sometimes in the days that are so crazy, one phone call after another, hundreds of emails, all the social media stuff coming at you, and all the challenges of just leadership, you don't have time to even think. But in those moments, you know that you have clarity, because clarity always comes in silence.
Phyllis, what I love about your answer, as I'm sitting here processing what you're saying, in the model of the head, the hand, the heart, the habit, you can't just focus on one of them, because really, to put it in different words, really the answer is it goes back to those habits. You have to have those disciplines in place so that you can stay true. Because as leaders, we can tend to maybe lean in and stay in that component that we're most comfortable with. But anytime we do that, then all of a sudden we're getting out of balance. We're not doing it the way that is going to protect us and have that umbrella of protection that the Lord wants.
Yeah, I believe that it's the integration of the heart, the head, the hands, and the habits. It's the only way. You can't just say, I'm going to think rightly. I'm going to do rightly. All of those things go together, and nothing works without the foundation of that relationship with Jesus. You can't lead like Jesus without Jesus. And the enemy of our souls would have us believe that we can do it, that we can work things out, that we can work harder and make things happen. But he wants us to believe his lie so we never really attain the promised land of God's call on our own heart. And that's what keeps us from doing it, is just listening to the busyness and not spending time with the Father.
Phyllis, as we've really kind of begun and we've looked at this, I think one of the first things that you said as we opened up this podcast was great leadership comes from great leaders. And so we always start from that premise of the individual leader. But we all have people that we lead. As we have looked at purpose and we've looked at values, that third component, which applies both personally and then also in the context of those that we have under our leadership, we look at goals. I'm a type A. I'm going to guess you're a type A. We are fantastic at making to-do lists and goals. And maybe I shouldn't speak that on you. Maybe that's not.
Oh, it's true.
Okay.
It's true.
So what do you recommend for leaders when we think about this idea of setting goals? I thought there was some great wisdom that you brought out in the Lead Like Jesus Revisited of some things to kind of help guide you as you think about this topic of goals.
Goal setting is so important. You have a vision that you want to accomplish, and you won't do it unless you make goals. When you think about how to set a goal, it's so important to think about, as you're working with a team and you say you've got this vision together, but sitting together and side by side and saying, what does it look like to accomplish this vision? And these are the goals that are going to help us do that. And so we recommend, there's so many good recommendations in the book, but that when you think about goals, obviously they have to be observable, they have to be measurable, and I think it's so important to make these goals with your team, even with your family. You have family visions, you have organizational visions, and so it's important to make those with the people who are going to be working on those goals. And that way, you have their buy-in. You really are asking, what does good behavior look like so that we can accomplish the vision? And then you manage that behavior. You manage that goal. You keep that going until you've accomplished it.
Like you said, within both the context of a family and a team, that has so much application. What would you say in terms of, and if my husband were here, which he often is co-hosting with me, in his absence, I'll ask this question. To somebody who has more goals than could actually be put on a sheet of paper, you guys made some recommendations about the number of goals. Why did you put that in there, and how would you frame that for our audience?
Well, obviously, all of us try to do more than we can possibly do. At least many of us do. I would say
guilty.
And I do, Karen.
I know.
So it's so important. First of all, let's look at Jesus. When you look at the life of Jesus in John 17, when he was praying to the Father, he said, I've done everything you call me to do, basically. I've accomplished everything that you have given me to do. So we want to accomplish the things that he's given us to do. And often what we see in goals is that people are focusing on goals that maybe they're not to do. Maybe someone else is to do those goals. So I think part of the challenge is as we're entering into the opportunity to create goals is that we've spent time in prayer, that we're really asking, what do you want people to focus on now? What are the things now? And so 3 to 5 goals is what we would recommend. Not so many goals that it's not attainable. You want your team and you want your family to have some wins. And so it's important to create some opportunities for them to win up front and something that's doable. Something that's stretch, that's important, but something that's also they can accomplish.
I love what you just said, because honestly, that really speaks to a very wide breadth of personalities. Because if you're a visionary and you have lots of ideas that the Lord is giving you, that makes room for that to be able to say, okay, right now, the word that you said was what to focus on now.
Now, yes.
This is what we're going to center in on. I love that. That's so practical. Phyllis, as we're thinking about goals and the leader, and particularly shifting into maybe a dynamic of not just self-leadership, but looking at corporations or organizations and families, you talk about how Jesus exemplified two very distinct roles in that leadership, the visionary role and the implementation role. Could you maybe elaborate on the difference and what those two look like and how that should be impactful in our leadership?
I would. I love that, too. We often refer to the visionary role, and we know what that role is about. This is about casting the great vision. This is about helping people understand where we want to go. What does that look like? Describing it as a place that other people say, yes, I want to come with you. So it's got to be a vision that people get excited about, that people want to be a part of. And that's up to the leader. And in this, we often picture a hierarchy. The pyramid is that the leader is at the top of the pyramid in the visionary role. And if you could see this, and in our book we show it, there's a pyramid, and there's the word responsible at the top, and it's pointing down. And then at the bottom of that pyramid is the word responsive, which is the people are responsive to the vision. And it's so critical as a leader that I can cast a vision that people will want to be a part of, that people will say, that's what I want to have happen. And Jesus, obviously, he had the vision that was set by his Father. He was the top of the hierarchy. And Jesus was even responsive to the Father's vision. And when you look at implementation and you think about how is this going to look, Jesus did an amazing implementation role when he washed the feet of the disciples. So in the implementation role, the traditional hierarchy turns upside down. And so now, at the top of that pyramid is responsible, and that's the people, and the leader is now at the bottom, and he or she is responsive. When Jesus washed the feet of the disciples, we feel like he was transitioning from the visionary role to the implementation role, that he turned the organizational pyramid upside down and said he had cast the vision. They knew where they were going. And he said, and this is how we're going to do it. We're going to serve each other. And I'm here to serve you to be sure that we accomplish the vision.
As you travel and are able to share this leadership material and vision with people all across the world, literally, if you run into the thought of servant leadership, you know, does that mean me just being a doormat? Is that a common response from people that aren't familiar with this?
Sometimes, actually, it depends on the country
okay. That
we're in. Because the idea of serving as a leader in the hierarchies in some countries, that is just unheard of. And in fact, in one of the countries that we were in Africa, we had a tribal chief that came to one of our training programs. And first of all, people were awed that he even came. And there was their tribal chief sitting in this Lead Like Jesus training with them. And at the end of the training, they were given shoe mitts to wipe the feet of the people in that room as Jesus cleaned the feet of the disciples. And the tribal chief got down on his knees and wiped the feet. That changed that village. It changed the people that were there, that their leader would say, I'm here to serve you. And so sometimes people will say, is that mean that we're just soft and we're just out there to please everybody? But pretty soon they realize it's power under control. It's power with a transformed heart that says, I have the power to do differently, but I have chosen to serve you. That's a lead like Jesus leader. It's not just serving to gain or to think about how I can get you to do what I want you to do. I'm serving you because that's my heart to do. It's my heart to help us accomplish the vision.
You talk about power under control. That's meekness. And that's one of the words that Jesus uses to describe himself. So what a picture that is. I love the idea that it's not one or the other, that really as a leader, you do have a responsibility to cast that vision and to allow that vision to be so compelling that people want to be a part of it. But then you do flip that paradigm and you do flip that pyramid over and serve. It's not either or, it is both that makes someone a lead like Jesus leader.
So. Absolutely.
Phyllis, we are about out of time for this particular podcast. Is there anything as we wrap up that just is on your heart as we talk about the head of a great leader that you want to leave our audience with?
When I think about the mind of a leader who leads like Jesus, I am reminded what Scripture says, that we have the mind of Christ. And it is so important that we affirm that we have the mind of Christ. I didn't say that. It's in the book. It's in Scripture that says you have the mind of Christ, and that when things are confusing, when things happen in our life that shouldn't be happening, or thoughts come into our mind that we know are not from Him, that we release those thoughts immediately, and that we begin to think about we have the mind of Christ. And I think that just knowing that our thinking changes, our perspective changes, knowing that our thoughts can come from Him.
Phyllis, you are traveling all over the place and have such a busy schedule. Thank you for taking the time out to come and be on the podcast. I know that our audience loves hearing from you, and as you lead this organization, that we are just indebted and grateful and lifting you up in prayer as you are the face of this organization in many ways. So thank you so much for your time. And I want to just redirect anybody who may be new to this information, this sparked an idea. Please go to leadlikejesus.com. You can order Lead Like Jesus Revisited, the book, the workbook, and see plenty of other material and curriculum available to help you in your leadership. Thanks so much for joining us, and we will see you next time.